This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. The chairman of the board of the Boston Philharmonic recently wrote a note to the Philharmonic's conductor, Benjamin Zander. She wrote, and I'm paraphrasing, "It will be important for you to do a pre-concert lecture before you perform Bruckner's Eighth Symphony this weekend. As you know, this is the concert that you and the orchestra love, but your audience is expecting to come and get some sleep. They think of Bruckner as inaccessible, terribly long, and a bit ponderous. It's pretty universal among people I've asked." Well, Zander responded to that note by writing this:
"Bruckner appeals to the highest parts of ourselves, the spiritual, the cosmic, and the eternal. If people are looking for light entertainment, then maybe they should skip this one. On the other hand, if they want to find out what heaven is like, they should check out this concert."
That's the kind of forceful defense of classical music that's typical of Benjamin Zander, who's been the conductor of the Boston Philharmonic since 1979. His recording of Bruckner's Fifth Symphony with the Philharmonia Orchestra of London was nominated for a Grammy Award. Benjamin Zander joins us in the studio now. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And that was Benjamin Zander. We just heard live reading his email response to the chairman of the board.
Yeah, it was a much longer letter, but essentially what it was saying was, if you want to be lightly entertained, then this probably isn't the right concert. And as she said, this is a place for people to catch up on their sleep. I say take a nap and really come fully engaged, aware, with your antennae excited and ready to be moved and touched and taken to another place.
And do you think that's part of because the way you conduct it?
It's partly the way I conduct it. I have to say that it is partly about how this music is expressed. It has become rather ponderous in the traditional performances. And that's a rather exciting thing, if I could just share. You see, I have here, unfortunately this isn't television, I have a beautiful score which my father got in 1918. He was a young soldier in the German army in the First World
War.
It's
basically some tattered sheet music or a tattered book of music.
He had it in his, and he could read this like a book. I mean, he read a score like a book. And this score has lots of instructions about moving the tempo and shaping it and holding and much more expressive. That was a student of Bruckner who added these terms. They're not in the original score, and we are following those instructions. So it comes out as a much more tumultuous and emotional experience than most people think of when they hear Bruckner.
Benjamin Zander, you, I believe, were the founding conductor of the Boston Philharmonic. So since 1979, you've led this group for more than 30 years.
Yes.
I want to read you a joke that I had actually not heard before today.
Yeah.
Maybe I should be embarrassed to admit that, but you may have heard it. I want to see if you can fill in the punchline. So the joke goes, how do you tell the difference between a philharmonic and a symphonic orchestra?
Is that the joke or is
that
the question?
That's the question. Do you know that?
Well, no, there is no difference, actually, because you see, in European cities, they don't have one orchestra. They have more than one orchestra. So, for instance, in Vienna, you have the Vienna Philharmonic and the Vienna Symphony. In Berlin, you have the Berlin Philharmonic and Berlin Symphony. Boston is the only city with two orchestras. So the Boston Symphony has to be distinguished from the other orchestra, and that's the Boston Philharmonic. And we're very happy that Boston is such a rich community, such an amazing pool of players here, that we can have two fantastic orchestras.
So then, as you said, I mean, we're a city of such rich classical music. Many people immediately think of the BSO when maybe they think of the premier one. What's sort of the role of the Philharmonic in relation to the BSO?
Well, the Boston Magazine wrote an article about the Boston Philharmonic many years ago, and they said the difference between the Boston Symphony and the Boston Philharmonic is the difference between marriage and an illicit affair. And in a sense, it was quite an amusing reaction. What we are...
You're the illicit affair?
Yeah, so absolutely. Boston Symphony is one of the greatest musical institutions in the world, and the oldest and the richest orchestra in America. We are, by comparison, young, hot, new, and experimental, and we try all sorts of fascinating things. Also, I take it upon myself to educate the audience. I say that we have to get them into the hall before so that I can tell them what the music is about, and that is the difference.
Educating people about music is a huge part of your life, really.
Right, it's what my life is about.
And I think you've said that you think that it's everyone, in fact, everyone actually might love classical music, they just might not know it yet.
No, I go even further. I say everybody does love classical music, but they haven't found out about it yet. I mean, so it's like saying, are children gifted for dancing or for singing? Well, of course, every child dances. There isn't a child in the world who doesn't dance. But the assumption is that this has to be learnt and it's not natural. But of course, it's the most natural thing in the world. The thing is to keep it alive and to train it and develop it, and that's what I do.
What about people who say, I've heard classical music and I just don't like it?
Well, that's right. Thank you for sharing, I say. Just listen a little bit more carefully. And the Bruckner is a very good example, because most people say Bruckner's heavy, it's ponderous, it's difficult and so on, inaccessible. I say, please, come along.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of it. Yes. And you can tell us why you think some people might consider this inaccessible and why you think it is accessible.
Now, this is...
Go ahead.
This is the beautiful Wagner tuba section in the 8th Symphony Slow Movement.
You'll be performing this weekend.
Now, just listen to the richness of the sound, the fullness and beauty.
So is that what some people consider ponderous and inaccessible?
Yes, because they don't understand the variety, the richness, the beauty. This music holds us body, mind, and soul. And it's, you know, a pop song lasts for 3 minutes, but this is 85 minutes of the deepest, most expressive music, and we become absolutely enthralled by it, and it sustains us by its power. Bruckner was a visionary, and in that sense he was like an Indian guru, like Gandhi. Imagine Gandhi came to Boston and announced he was going to give a talk. Would people be looking at their watch and wondering whether they could rush home? No. To watch television? No. Because his pure spirit and the absolute wonder of his being, you feel different in the presence of people like that, and you feel different in the presence of Bruckner, and it affects us in our whole being. We walk out of a Bruckner symphony walking on air, light, without any problems. You know, somebody came to me in the rehearsal and said, I'm feeling very sick, I may have to leave. And at the end of the rehearsal, he came beaming and said, my sickness has gone away. And that is because his music infuses us with a kind of joy, a kind of energy, a life-giving force. And we forget about all the small cares of life, and we forget everything, and we walk out elated. I mean, it's so powerful.
Benjamin Zander, how would you assess the health of classical music in general right now, and then the health of classical music in Boston right now?
Well, the health of classical music in Boston, if I can start with that, is absolutely spectacular. I conduct the top youth orchestra. There are 11 youth orchestras at the New England Conservatory.
You teach there?
Yeah, so I've been teaching there for 45 years.
And in fact, I think you also end up teaching at the Walnut Hill School in Natick as part of that?
Also the Walnut Hill School and the Boston Philharmonic, and everything is burgeoning with interest and players. I just got a letter this morning from a woman who I've been working with in Mexico, who we had a little group of 13 children that I was looking after, and brought the television cameras in, and she just called me this morning and said, now there are 5,000 children and 23 orchestras. Look what's happening in Venezuela. I mean, this is just unbelievable. It's burgeoning in all directions. I say you ain't seen nothing yet.
So you really believe that, despite some people thinking it's a dying musical breed, or at least only older people like it, you think it has a future among young people as well?
Oh, no question about it. I mean, it's China, there are 30 million pianists and 10 million violin players in China alone. I mean, just think how many instrument builders that will produce. So I think we look too too narrowly. We look at the news about the Detroit Symphony closing, but we don't look about the eternal values of music that feed the soul for humanity for the rest of time.
You teach, you're a conductor. You also have this very interesting part of your life in which you do motivational speaking, not necessarily about music. In fact, you spoke to the TED conference, this great series, and it's this YouTube video of you doing it has really made the round. We have a piece of it that we want to play.
My estimation is that probably 45 of you are absolutely passionate about classical music. You adore classical music. Your FM is always on that classical dial, and you have CDs in your car, and you go to the symphony, and your children are playing instruments. You can't imagine your life without classical music. That's the first group. It's quite a small group. Then there's another group, bigger group. These are the people who don't mind classical music. You know, you come home from a long day and you take a glass of wine and you put your feet up, a little Vivaldi in the background doesn't do any harm, right? That's the second group. Now comes the third group. These are the people who never listen to classical music. It's just simply not part of your life. You might hear it like secondhand smoke at the airport, but and maybe a little bit of a march from Aida when you come into the hall, but otherwise you never hear it. That's probably the largest group of all.
These are the people you think just haven't discovered it yet. They haven't tapped into their love yet.
And let's think seriously about this. Everybody has the capacity to be engaged in anything that is truly valuable and wonderful. All you need is somebody to guide them. That's true. I mean, people, they need their father to tell them about football so that they can get interested in football. It always happens that you don't have to persuade a child to go fishing with his father, because that's the natural thing to do. If the parent is enthusiastic and loves something, naturally the child would be drawn to that. And we have to just make sure that there are enough parents around to draw people in.
You market yourself as a motivational speaker.
Not actually, if I may say so, as a motivational speaker, but rather a transformational speaker.
Transformational.
Because motivational is where you pump people up, and then unfortunately, like Chinese food, after 2 hours, you're hungry for more. Transformational is where you really change the way that people look at the world.
So why do that, since you already have a full and accomplished life as a teacher, a conductor, a musician?
Well, it's life-giving. It's life-giving for me, it's life-giving for them, and it changes the world. And of course, it's one of the ways that we can increase the number of people who have full and expressive lives. That's what it's really about. That's the gift of classical music. It enables people to be more in touch with what makes them human and the range of experience and expression that they have available after having experienced a Bruckner symphony or a Mozart opera is vastly greater than virtually any other activity they can be involved in. And so now, full of this expressive, you know, the emotional pores get open. Then they're available, and they're available for possibility. And our book is called The Art of Possibility.
In that TED speech we just heard from, you talk about how the conductor just stands up there and it doesn't actually make a sound.
Right.
And as you certainly know, some people can't figure out what it is the conductor does. But you say that you realized sort of well into your conducting career that the conductor depends for his power on his ability to make other people powerful,
right.
So the musicians.
Right.
And first of all, I think that's very interesting. But you also said that you've extended that to your transformational speaking,
right.
In sort of the corporate world,
right.
That management can make other people powerful. So
right.
You've bridged music in the corporate
world.
That's
essentially the role of any leader, and I include that parenting and teaching and any other kind of leader. The job of the leader is to awaken possibility in other people, and whether it's me in my relationship to the players, because the player who is enlivened and awakened and energetic and passionate is going to be a much more effective performer, and the audience member who's engaged and passionate and knows what's going on in the music is going to be a more effective listener. So it's about engaging people on the highest level of which they are capable.
You've also said your definition of success is how many eyes you have shining out in the yes. audience. It means you've really got them.
That
right?
is the definition of success for me, because it's all about the shining eyes. And if the eyes aren't shining, I have to ask myself the question, who am I being that the eyes are not shining? So I'm always looking for the eyes. I can't see anybody on the radio, but I suspect that their eyes are shining. If they come to the concert on Thursday night when I'm going to be explaining the music with the orchestra, or Saturday and Sunday where I explain it before, I'm willing to guarantee they'll have shining eyes. And in fact, I offer a money-back guarantee. If their eyes aren't shining at the end, they can come and get their money back.
Benjamin Zander, thank you very much for coming on the show and talking about this. Starting tomorrow night and then running through this weekend, I believe, right, you will be conducting the Boston Philharmonic as it performs Bruckner's Eighth Symphony. Right. And our listeners can find more about that on our website, which is wbur.org/Boston. Benjamin Zander, thank you very much for coming
in. Thank you, Sasha. It's a pleasure. Your eyes are shining, too.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. You can comment on our show on our website, wbur.org/Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.